VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I am not reading off a script as I usually do. That's because our regular producer, Charlie, isn't here today, and he's replaced by somebody with a French-sounding last name, which is actually a first name, a bit like you, Julian Lawrence. That's right. Julian, one of my guests today. Also joining us in the studio, it is the excellent Tony Cascarino, who's currently wearing a very fetching scarf. I might add, of course, that Tony, of course, spent some years in France, so maybe that's not surprising. And also looking extremely pensive, it's James Scowcroft. A bunch of stuff to get through this week. We've got United and Bournemouth and a bit of slot time, but we have to start at Anfield. Right, Liverpool and Arsenal. We really should be talking about the game. We should be talking about a Klopp-tastic performance, but we can't, because we need to talk about Alexis Sanchez. Now, for those of you who don't know, Alexis Sanchez did not start the game. Liverpool 2-0 down at halftime. He comes on. The line that's fed is, well, Alexis Sanchez didn't start the game. By the way, neither did Mesut Ozil, not that anybody noticed. But the idea was that these guys weren't going to start the game because they were going to be more direct and try to bypass Liverpool's press. That worked great. He comes on, plays rather well. But then we find out that, and this might have been a contributing factor, Julian, shall we say?
Yeah.
To his exclusion, that apparently last week he had a row with a teammate and he walked out on training. Now, Julian, is there anything you can add to this narrative? Have I missed anything out?
No, you've been perfect. I think he was dropped because of his attitude at training. Not just, I think, in the week before the Liverpool game, but for a few weeks now and a few months.
He's Bayern as well, wasn't it?
Yes, the Bayern game, the attitude on the pitch, and Bayern game, the attitude off the pitch as well.
So the attitude on the pitch was when he got annoyed with Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and so on, because they were
rubbish. He stopped against Bayern for the last 10 minutes. He stopped playing. He was standing up there and not doing much.
Right. I suppose some of the other people would stop playing from the first minute, but... Sorry, you might detect a bit of bias in what I'm saying.
But do you remember 2 weeks ago we had that, I think James was there, we had that chat about Aguero and why Pep had dropped him. And oh no, Tony. Lucas was here. I can't remember who was here. But anyway, do you remember when we said maybe the attitude of training hadn't been the greatest because maybe he's not the best trainer? Do you remember what you said? That when you and Gianluca Vialli did that book and you went to see, some of the coaches said, but sometimes you need a rule for the big star and a rule for everybody else. And do you remember we had that very interesting debate?
Yeah,
the debate that's again for Alexis. What do you do if the attitude is wrong? If he argues with people, if he stops training halfway through, goes back to the dressing room, what do you do? You know, do you give him a pat and do you let him basically do what he wants, or do you then drop him because of that? I think it's interesting, and maybe even managers would do different things.
Well, Antonio Conte left out Costa completely.
Yep.
Payet was a similar situation at West Ham. For me, you can't. If you're gonna make a stance, don't put him on the bench. Just drop him completely. Leave him out of your squad. All these things that we're led to believe are true, you have to. And you know, we talk about Man United and Fergie over the years. He made a stance. Don't just go halfway. Oh, I'll put him on the bench and that's a punishment. That's a slap on the wrist. You have to go further, because I feel Arsenal are in a mess at the moment, and it's quite clear.
It's funny you mentioned Fergie. One incident that a lot of people seem to have forgotten was the time that Paul Scholes refused to go and play in a League Cup game. You'll recall this.
Which he regrets now.
Well, he writes about it in his book. He apologized. But Fergie took a hard line, which didn't mean, like, you know, crucifying him or selling him to Rotherham. He just, I think, didn't play him in the next game. And then and then welcomed him back in the fold. But this is the part I don't understand. I take your point about the hard line. But this is a halfway measure. And this is something that can blow up in your face. Because I'll tell you what. What if Alexis Sanchez had come on at halftime and scored a hat trick, right? And they had won. What then? If you have somebody... So I don't... I struggle to buy that this is a disciplinary measure.
No.
Because it could have boomeranged really, really badly.
That's my point.
And you know what? And I hope I'm not giving away any secrets here. When stories like these come out, it's one of two things. It's one player or a player's agent, usually, revealing a story to one newspaper, then has a big exclusive, blah, blah, blah. When it's in every paper at the same time, it's generally not a single player. It's generally something institutional. I don't know for a fact, but I'm going to just wildly speculate about the source of the leak. I would surmise that this leak, wherever it came from, had Arsenal's ample blessing because it contains a whole bunch of details and whatnot that you would imagine the club would be comfortable with. I mean, Julian, did you read anything that would make the club uncomfortable in what was leaked and in the tone of it?
No.
There's only one bad guy here. It's Alexis Sanchez. We don't know who he had his argument with, right? We're simply getting one side of the story here.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Scoey, what is the point of disciplining him halfway if that is what happened?
Well, the point of that is he's such an important player that he almost hits the fear factor, isn't it? I need to leave him out, but I need him as well. I think whatever happens, it's going to backfire on you. But you've got to, and this is where Arsene Wenger's losing it, he's got to have a hard line. A lot of people have said he's crazier to have dropped him. If he's acting like that in training, I don't think you've got a choice. I think you've got to do something. Mm. And I think you're probably right, Cash. You've got to think, well, I've got to go the whole hog here. And just set an example to everyone. Look, I'm not messing around here now. You know, this is where we are. We're underachieving. It's not good. And you just say, right, yeah, stay at home for the weekend. You're not wanted.
Right.
Because you're right, because if he comes on, which he does do, and he impacts the game, it then just creates more, I should have started, what you're doing, you don't know what you're doing.
You can't carry people.
He's bottled it, hasn't he?
In football, you can't carry people. For whatever reason, if someone's not performing to the level that we know they can, and Sanchez is an exceptional talent, we all know that, there's no debate there. The debate is, can you carry anybody? Sometimes they carry people, Arsenal, and they're allowed to get away with things.
Yeah, but not him.
Fine.
Because, you know what?
I don't mean previous games in the start of the season. I'm talking carrying him as is he is today.
Arsenal's best player?
Well, he's Arsenal's best player, but he wasn't... Like you said, when you switch off against Bayern at home and then you have a spat in training literally not trying, you've got a rest of the group to manage, Gab. It's not just about...
Yeah, but I'm sorry, but I'm, if the rest of the group... And by the way, he was the only guy on the bench. Aaron Ramsey was also on...
Theo was on the bench.
Coming back from injury crew. Okay, so like these drones at the club, right? And you know who I'm talking about, right? Talk about carrying people, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I take it to what you said about somebody's not performing as well as he can, right? We can make the point that Alexis Sanchez isn't performing as well as he can. And we can make the point that maybe Kieran Gibbs is performing to the top of his ability. But if Alexis Sanchez Oxlade Chamberlain. But if Alexis Sanchez at 80% is greater than Oxlade-Chamberlain at 100% or 110%. How is that an issue? Isn't there a broader imperative here, which is about reaching the Champions League so you can win your top four trophy, trying to turn things around? If you're Koscielny, do you really want to see... Are you really fussed about Alexis at 80% versus Oxlade-Chamberlain 110%?
Yeah.
I want him to be the
best he can be, Alexis Sanchez. If I'm a teammate of his and I know he can win his games, right, I want him as best as he can be.
Okay, but
I would be driving him to be.
If you're a teammate and you're a fellow professional, you might also appreciate that maybe
he's unsettled
over the contract, over the fact that his manager, nobody seems to know where this guy's going to be there next year.
You fail as a team. You don't fail on individual levels, you fail as a team.
Right. And you're more likely to succeed if Alexis Sanchez at 80% plays than Oxlade-Chamberlain 110%. Julian, am I wrong?
No, I agree with you. But I think
so you disagree with Cass.
Yeah, I think Alexis has been at his best for most of the season.
Yeah, well, I'm not debating that.
But even at 80% or even at 50%, if the attitude is right for the, you know, on
that's
every
a
other,
terrible message to add to the rest of the group.
Yeah, but
one of his problems
is he hasn't got the characters that possibly he had 15 years ago that could almost manage that situation.
Absolutely.
The situation. And Alexis Sanchez says, well, there might be one here that might dig me out in training. 15 years ago, you'd have had
all their back players pointing the finger old, at Thierry Henry, Dennis Bergkamp, if they weren't doing it.
The old George Graham. Yes. So it worked. Yeah. You know, you had the sort of the old guard.
Bergkamp.
Exactly, with the new players.
No, I'm just giving examples. Okay, yeah. You know, Jose Mourinho spoke about...
No, it's just funny, because I would have imagined like you would have brought up like Tony Adams, Patrick Vieira. No.
Well, you obviously didn't see Bergkamp. He was a bit of a feisty bugger. Bergkamp, he'd get himself involved.
No, but
involved.
The Lee Dixons, the Tony Adams, the Steve Bowles, they would have managed the situation.
Well, yeah. No, there's a lack of leadership that I think meant that Alex has got away with a lot of things this season and also in previous seasons, you know, and that's for sure.
Are we comfortable with this narrative that all of a sudden he's like some sort of like a diva, irresponsible, unprofessional? Because
no, he's not, Gab. It's not the point.
This is the way he's been depicted in the press. This is the narrative, is that he's turned into some diva and he's having a go at his teammates who are crappy. It's funny because him and Ozil, right, this is how they react. Ozil has been absolutely slaughtered by everybody and he's not been particularly good, right? And he just retreats and he gets ill, right? That was his thing? Illness?
Yes.
Illness, yeah.
Illness.
After travelling to Istanbul, maybe the aircon in the flight back was too...
He had a twisted sock. That's about as much as... Yeah.
So he just retreats. The other guy has a go at his teammates, and this is the end result.
No, but arguments between teammates and you two...
It's not a problem.
It happens all the time. All the time.
Sanchez doing that is not a problem to me.
It's the fact that he walked out.
No, the problem that he feels like he's got too much power in a side that is failing. And he might be right on a lot of things, but he has to recognise that he owes it to the club to pull the line or toe the line to a certain degree. This is obviously gone much further than that. And Wenger is the biggest problem because Wenger's quite comfortable not having much to say. I'm stepping back from it and only going half measures.
So are you saying Wenger's more to blame than Alexis?
Yeah, clearly, absolutely.
He doesn't like confrontation, does he? You can clearly see that. And you can't have a manager that doesn't like confrontation.
You're going to get it.
Why is Alexis Sanchez getting all this blame then instead of Wenger?
Because of the statement that was released.
I think Wenger's getting a lot of blame. I wouldn't say it's...
Yeah, but from different areas. Yeah. Wenger's getting it from different places.
One thing that struck me, and again, the backstory here, he has a year left after this on his contract, so this is one you need to renew. He's 29 already, 28. Or 30, or...
28.
Right, 28. There's a contract on the table, apparently $180,000 a week, which would be a record, I believe, for Arsenal. He hasn't signed it yet. There's all these links about interest from other clubs. And I want to put this to you, Julian, because the two clubs that I see most often cited are Juventus and Paris Saint-Germain. They don't really make much sense to me. And I think this is why Arsenal feel they have a strong hand, and I'll tell you why. At Juventus... I mean, they already have Higuain and Dybala. Unless they're going to sell Dybala and replace a younger guy with an older guy, I don't quite see the logic in that. Paris Saint-Germain, again, when you just signed Draxler, you have Cavani, you still have Di Maria, who you're stuck with. There's Pastore, there's Lucas. I mean, does it really make sense to go and try to... move for this? Are they, do you really think that they're genuinely pursuing Alexis Sanchez?
I don't think it's... as advanced as what a lot of English papers have.
You're saying he's done. He's gone.
It's like, for sure. What's for sure is that they want a number two behind Cavani as a number nine. Whether Alexis is ready to go to PSG to sit on the bench, I'm not so sure at all.
That would be the idea. And he's kind of stuck in that wage bracket, right? So they're offering $180,000 a week. There's only a handful of clubs in the world who can offer that.
It's not a bad place to be stuck, is it?
No. But well, it's not a bad place to be stuck.
Wage bracket.
If you sign it, yeah. But what I'm saying is, I mean, unless he's willing to consider a move to Chelsea or United,
or a club like the.
No, I think you'll find PSG can play your 250s and this
but,
a week.
No, I that's exactly what I said. But we just, Julian and I just said, if you take away PSG and Juventus, who I think are both somewhat unlikely, the other clubs that could afford him, he's not going to start. He's not going to go start. He's not going to start for Barcelona. He's not going to start for Real Madrid. I mean, United need yet another attacking midfielder.
He'd be perfect for United, and he'd certainly play.
You just want to keep adding assets at United. This is wonderful. it's like he's playing Risk. Well,
listen, apart from maybe Ronaldo, Messi, he's as good as anyone. I you know, his ability wise, and I've seen him play. I think he would go into most teams. I don't think that'd be a problem him being on the bench.
A problem for takers. I don't.
I think it's a huge problem actually because clubs.
His problem will be choice.
If you're,
I'm not sure he will have that.
I think you guys are way off. Way off.
No, but what's interesting though is that he's not going to sign a new deal with Arsenal. Now. I mean, it's hard to see unless Wenger.
Arsenal's best player by a mile.
He's the best player in a club who's fifth in the Premier League. I mean,
I think enough clubs queuing up for him.
Who's better? Who would you rather have? Alexis or Mkhitaryan?
Alexis.
Yeah, you would all day long.
All day long for me.
Miles better. And Mkhitaryan's far better than any of those. In fact, tell me who's a better player at United than Alexis. Tell me.
I'd say Ibrahimovic and Pogba.
You think Ibrahimovic is better than no chance? It's 34, 34, can't move.
35.
Well, sorry,
United would have had Sanchez at the weekend, they win that game against Bournemouth easy. And that's
because
one
he takes the penalty.
He's being facetious.
I'm glad you guys, listen, can I just say, having followed this guy's career, right? I'm glad you guys are so wonderfully excited by Alexis Sanchez, all right? I think he's a great player. He's a wonderful player.
I think he's world class.
World class is a stupid label that doesn't mean anything. But yes, he's world class, okay? He's an exceptional player. But I don't think his market out there is anywhere near. And the other thing I know obviously you look at Van Persie, Arsenal have sold players to United before, but I look at it from United's perspective, you have so much money tied up and so many attacking players that you then really need to add another guy. What if he's not signing a new deal because he'd actually like to know who his employer is going to be next year?
And that's what I was going to say. If Wenger goes and let's say, Max Allegri comes in, then maybe Max Allegri can convince Alexis to stay and to sign a new deal.
We need to talk about Liverpool since this is actually a really, really, they won it five times. Okay, five times.
Yeah,
Cass, you're a Liverpool fan as a kid.
Yeah.
Five times. Good. Yeah. Just checking. I thought this is...
And as an adult.
And as a what?
Adult.
As an adult.
Not just as a kid.
Did you ever score against Liverpool?
You're still a big kid.
You ever score against Liverpool in your career?
No, I hit the woodwork at the cop end. Hit the bar.
Coincidence?
I was subbed that day. I was having a drink.
I want to... So Klopp, they get 16 days off because of their various cup shenanigans. They come back. They play Leicester on a Monday night with somebody named Craig Shakespeare in charge, Shaky. They get their behinds handed to them. They become figures of fun. There's all this negativity around them. And then they go and they play Arsenal and they win 3-1. And then the first 45 minutes, they looked really, really good.
Exactly. Yeah. You knew it. It's the same with the Tottenham game as well. And then we said we knew they would turn it on.
But why?
Do you not think... I was going to say, Julian, do you not think it might be something to do with the way Leicester played and the way that Arsenal played? Do you not think that made the difference? Made the way, if you watched the game, Liverpool were, the centre-halves were getting on the ball, just pinpointing passes to people's feet and they were spinning and no real pressure. Coquelin and Xhaka were never even getting near them. I don't remember Ndidi and Drinkwater. I thought they got far closer to Liverpool. So, tactically, it was a different game. Sorry,
Julian. But if you look at it, you look at the Burnley away game, you look at that Leicester away game, and all those games where They have the ball with no space in front of them. They're struggling. But it's the lack of plan B from Klopp. And we've mentioned it many times. But if Arsenal and Spurs go to Anfield and think they can play and leave all that space behind and all that space in midfield because Xhaka and Coquelin were far, the space between them and the back four was far too big, where Lallana and Mane and Firmino and Coutinho and all of them could take all that space, that's what they're going to do. They're going to punish you. Mm. And that's exactly what
happened. Three midfielders scored the goals. It's so obvious what Liverpool do.
Mane is a midfielder.
Well, type of midfielders, you know what I mean. They're all like semi-number 10s, aren't they?
Well, that's because they don't play with any strikers, if you want to talk about that.
But they get goals regular.
Right.
First goal, I mean, go back to the first goal, the header is won by Firmino against Koscielny. Now, that worries me. Your centre-half getting beaten by Firmino in the air for the first goal with a little flick that ends up moving into a, you know, a little bit of intricate play on the edge of the box. But that tells you the story of how easy Arsenal were to play against.
Was Cech maybe the blame as well?
Yeah, I think he's... I don't know. I think the Mane goal, he maybe should have done better. I mean, defensively, I think they were all over the place from start to... So, especially in that first half.
I'll go back to this and I'll bring up Liverpool strikers. They have two centre forwards. One is Danny Ings, poor guy, he's always injured. The other one is Sturridge. I go back to this. Should they have sold him in January?
Well, it looks like
no one ever brought it up. Well,
they might have tried and no one.
I don't think he's fit now or something.
He's on so much money, Gav.
Yeah, he's lost a hunger as well.
Easier said than done.
What?
Who would take him? Who would spend?
Now there is a striker that. You talked about Sanchez not finding a club. We can't have a case for Sturridge, can we?
Well, what I wonder, though, is if you break Sturridge down to his component parts, right? I know last week we talked about Harry Kane and how wonderful he is. If you break it down to the individual components, and you guys were strikers, you guys know this, right? I'm not being funny. I would have Harry Kane over Sturridge any day of the week. But what can Harry Kane do that Sturridge cannot do? That's what I mean. You get into these intangible, play regular, right? Sturridge is basically two-footed relative to Kane. He's stronger than Kane. He's faster than Kane.
It's irrelevant. Your point is irrelevant.
Why?
Three years ago, when he's playing every week, your argument is valid, but the here and now moment is you can't get the lad on a football pitch. There's no clubs going to touch him. Maybe.
Do you think it's because he's continually injured, or do you think that it might have something to do with the fact that Klopp's not super bothered nor trying to about integrating him in his team?
I think he's tried, hasn't he? And it hasn't worked, so he's given up.
We all understand his ability and look at it and go, wow, this guy's got something very different at times that can win you a game. But we haven't seen it very often, Gab, have we? Especially in the last few years. And we all reflect him, we're all getting a bit nostalgic because we're going back to Suarez and Sterling at the front for Liverpool, so where they were amazing.
Should they have cashed in?
Obviously.
All right, no, because I suggested that in September. People thought I was crazy. Like, where are you going to get another striker like Sturridge from? Blah, blah, blah. Origi's rubbish. Okay. The region at least plays. Want to talk a little bit about the people who bring you the game podcast. Our sponsors, FanDuel is one of them. FanDuel's one-day fantasy football at fanduel.co.uk. How does it work? You select a team of Premier Leagues for Premier League players. You select a team of Premier League players for a single round of fixtures. So you're not annoyingly locked in for the whole season where you make the mistakes early on and then you just keep losing. No, it's not like that. You can choose your contest as well. I entered the Premier League Saturday fan favorite this week, which is only covers the Saturday games. I did not do too well, but it's a £5 entry and £2,500 in prize money, £500 going to the winner, and 120 participants winning cash. So the odds are actually pretty good. You like all fantasy football, you pick your dream team. You have £100 million to spend. There's no subs, no captains, none of that nonsense. And unlike other fantasy games, it's not just about assists and clean sheets. They've got this algorithm which uses Optostats to give a value to even the contribution of those obscure players, like, say, Idrissa Gueye, who, of course, scored a goal recently, but normally doesn't show up in the stats the way others do. So FanDuel scoring reflects a player's true performance, whatever their position. And Because you're a loyal listener of the Game Podcast, we have a special offer for you. If you sign up with the promo code THEGAME, then FanDuel will return your entry fee as free credit up to £10 if you don't win cash in your first contest. Go to fanduel.co.uk, that's FANDUEL.co.uk, and enter our promo code THEGAME in the promo code field to sign up, and you will bag the offer. Right, moving on from there to the Theater of Dreams, as they've been calling it since the beginning of time, right? No?
No.
No? It's amazing. It's called Old Trafford, but so much of it is actually very new.
Now, Old Trafford is the place. No,
I know, that it's I know, in. I know.
The stadium hasn't been named Old Trafford. Have you ever been?
What?
Oh!
Yes, I was there when I heard them when they played Trafford Road. That was good, right? that was impressive. With all of Manchester's musical history, right? They have to go and come up with this cheesy song
by John Denver.
By John freaking Denver, John Denver and the Muppets, right? Seriously. I suppose, again, the big talking here point here is Mings and Ibrahimovic. Before we get to that, though, I thought United were just going to go and absolutely run rampant over them. Bournemouth were on the slide. I thought United were on a good roll. Why did it not happen?
The two statues I had up front didn't help, Ibrahimovic and Rooney. Too blasé after Lord Mayor's show. A typical Manchester United. It's been the theme. It's their worst home record since 1990. Can't kill teams off. Don't take the chances. Got a mistake in them at the back. Terrible mistake by Phil Jones. And it's the same old story. A score draw against a team who are very poor.
This is Scully the fan talking.
Yeah. Right, that was it. I thought he was going to cry.
Just nailed it there for you.
I thought he was going to cry.
Doom and gloom.
I was disappointed. I was, because I've been pushing this line all year, that actually this time, you know, Mourinho's actually right. They have been unlucky at home. And I think in many of their first games, they deserve to win many of their earlier games. And that, again, wearing my Duncan Castles hat, even though he'd probably deny it, this is the most attacking team Mourinho has ever had. No, it's one of the most attacking squad he's ever had.
Yeah.
And he's trying to make it work because people say it's so important. It's Old Trafford, blah, flying wingers.
The balance isn't right, though.
Oh, it's not right, but I mean, that's what he inherited. And he didn't go and try to turn this into a more traditional Mourinho-type team. And by the way, because I know this is going to happen, there's going to be some doofus on Twitter pointing out that, whoa, no, how can you say that? Because when he was at Real Madrid, he scored 126 goals. Surely that was more attacking. Real Madrid is an entirely different kettle of fish, okay? League. It's a completely different league. It's a completely different situation. And I would argue that Real Madrid team, against big opponents, was not particularly attacking. You remember Pepe in midfield and all this nonsense? So, and he still had Pepe and Xabi Alonso, by the way, which this team does not have Xabi Alonso. They have Michael Carrick, who's, you know,
What surprised me is that it's sort of gone amiss because of the incidents involving Zlatan and Mings, is that we actually, and James touched on it, missing chances, not taking the opportunities. But Bournemouth, for a long period, had 10 men, which we sort of forgot, really. With 11, I mean, someone said to me yesterday, said, oh, they'd have won against 11. It's the fact, you know, you playing against 10 men should be, at Old Trafford should be a match you give me, shouldn't it?
This idea that it's harder playing against 10 men, it's been totally...
No. There is a point there, because I watched the game and Bournemouth literally had two banks, and then the distances, they did it very, very well. The distances between the defence and the midfield were minimal, and they just suffocated all space at United. And to be fair, United never really looked like scoring. They got a penalty, which was dubious. Never looked like
chances to score at the end. Well, the first one, especially...
Julian, in the first 20 minutes, they're at Bournemouth up time and time and time again. Okay, as soon as they had a man sent off, I'm sure you played against it, all of a sudden, Kaz, you've got no space running behind, you've got no space to get the ball to feet. You get the ball wide, okay, we'll show you inside into where we've got all our bodies. It is hard.
If only you had a big, strong centre forward.
Okay, so you're telling me United have got all these attacking options. Name a left winger, a right winger that United have got.
Jesse Lingard?
He's not. He's a midfield player.
Obviously, you're going to say not Martial was a winger. Because
no, he's not. He's a centre forward.
Yeah.
So you tell me all the wide... So you said you've got all these attacking options. You've got no wide players. You've got no pace.
with Ibrahimovic.
It's 2017. I don't know that people neatly fall into the mold. What do you want? Steve Coppell? Like, is that what you want? Like,
Bernard Jomed? You
know, Golden Hill?
Bernard Jomed was a left winger.
Yeah. You know, the game's changed a little bit. You get going, put people in tiny little boxes. You got a squad of about 50. Most of them are very good. I agree with you. You should have been beating Bournemouth.
Valencia can cross the ball from, you know.
And he did put in some decent crosses.
I thought balance
Paul
is
Pogba
wrong.
On the day was incredibly poor.
You know, he was not good.
I've never seen a player like mishit so many passes that went everywhere where they shouldn't have gone.
I want to ask one tiny technical question before we get to Mings and Ibrahimovic. You know that chance at the end that he completely fluffed? So
which one? The last one or the one before where the ball bounced on him?
He basically,
not the one that Ibra gives him, the other one. The one
where he almost collapses.
In the studio, they say, well, he should have just side-footed it, right?
Yeah.
Instead, he tried a fancy
because
finish.
They're all forward coaches, aren't they, in the studio?
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about, right? I mean, okay, obviously, hindsight's always 20/20, and I'm assuming if he side-foots it, he at least gets the ball on target. But as a striker, if you're confident hitting the ball differently.
Well, you're confident with your feet.
Well, that's what I mean. But
I was far more confident on my left than I was on my right. So if I fell on my
you'd side foot it just so you could get it on target, so you wouldn't get yelled at.
Try and pick a corner, but.
Okay, but he's obviously, but if it was on your left, you'd feel comfortable whacking it or hitting it.
Yeah.
So this whole, like, you should have side footed thing is kind of nonsense, yeah? Did it annoy you as a striker when, like, you'd have some right back who couldn't play being like, Scully, why are you side footed? You're jogging back up the pitch and you get like Mark Venus saying like, come on, Scully, FFS.
Yeah, he did
come on,
do
just
that
side
as well.
Foot. Did he?
Yeah.
Sorry, Mark. Not picking on you. We should also add that Pogba's not a center forward.
Yeah,
no, he's not
used to be in that position.
All right. Mings and Ibrahimovic. For those who don't know, there's a sequence of play where Tyrone Mings goes and tackles Rooney, actually, wasn't it? Yeah. And then Rooney kind of
cleans
falls.
Them both out.
Yeah, well, I don't think he meant to hit both of them, but Rooney then like falls into Ibrahimovic, both of them go down. Would have made a great YouTube clip if it had ended there. But then I guess Ibrahimovic has to kind of hurdle Mings. Mm-hmm. Some people, not a view I share, argue that in so doing, Ibrahimovic had tried to stamp on Mings. There was some priors earlier. Ibrahimovic had thrown Mings to the ground. I mean, well, this was many minutes before. Mings then gets up and goes over Ibrahimovic himself and plants his foot on the side of Ibrahimovic's head. So that's sort of the first incident. Ibrahimovic obviously felt that, well, we'll get to what happened after. But from what you saw of the video, I just want to ask, is there enough grounds to think that Mings knew exactly what he was doing?
No.
He's not looking down. So he doesn't really know. If you see the image of when his foot connects with Zlatan's head.
He does glance down and then glances up again because he looks where he's
from
going.
From where the actual, when he makes contact with his head,
it's not so much, he sort of scrapes his head, doesn't he? It's not a come down. Yeah, I think he's gone to jump him, and I think as he's doing it, he's looking out wide. I think he's mistimed his jump, and he's come down, and he's caught him. I don't think he's meant to do it at all.
Are you influenced in this by the fact that you know the guy, you're at the same club? And
a little bit of everything,
he's
really.
He's not that kind of player?
Yeah, I am. And right. This is what I want to know, and this is a question I want you to answer. So he'll get a 3-match ban. I think that's pretty, because that's where
he could get more, but yeah.
Okay, but how can the FA prove that he's guilty? How can they prove it?
Because the FA don't have, I think, the burden.
So you sit in front of a panel. I'm Tyrone Mings. Listen. You sit in front. I said, I didn't mean to do it. How can they prove?
Okay, because they don't do it based on beyond a reasonable doubt. They do it based on the balance of probabilities. So if they get enough people saying circumstantially, it actually looks like he did it on purpose. If they get enough people saying that the guy's a professional athlete, he may be 6'5", but he's coordinated and so on, he should be.
So he turns up, and I don't know if he's got children or not. So if that was me, I'd turn up and say, tell you now, my kid's life, I didn't mean to do that. So I'm going to tell, yes, you did.
how do we even know they're your kids? I mean,
it's very.
In a court of law,
no.
There is not enough evidence.
But this is not a court of law. That's the thing. It's a disciplinary.
It still be a miscarriage of justice, right. If he didn't mean to do it.
It's the same.
Okay, but yeah, but you don't know
everything.
That.
Then it's the same with Ibra. Ibra said that that's the way.
Listen, he's guilty. Don't worry about that.
He exactly said the same as Mings. I didn't mean to do it. I jumped. That's the way I jumped.
You have to do it. You have to do it on the balance of probabilities. If you can make a very compelling case. Now, one thing I should point out.
I would say McKay says it wasn't intentional. Okay. End of story.
Okay, bro, that's great. You say that, and then I bring up what I think rightly was said in the studio. I forget if it was Souness and Redknapp?
No, it was Terry and Souness, I think.
So Souness is saying, you're guilty, ban, because you didn't go over and shake his hand. What kind of evidence is that?
Listen, we've all played sports to some level, some of us, and some of us to professional level, right? And I'm sure we've all had situations where we have accidentally injured somebody, right?
And done on purpose.
Well, yeah. For my part, every time that it was genuinely accidental, my first instinct was
Can we split this? Because I'm trying to visualize how you've injured someone playing sport.
No, but when you
give us an example?
Oh, that's mean.
I'll give you an example.
Tell him your karate one.
Well, no. I accidentally clotheslined somebody playing rugby, and I caught them right by the eye, and I broke their orbit, and that's blood horrific. Started coming out of their eye, right? Mm-hmm. My first care was to make sure that the person was okay and to apologize to them. So, I mean,
you couldn't say it at the time.
What? He could. I don't know. I don't know what the guy was thinking, but it happens, right? When you accidentally, when you think you've done it. So, I mean, I'm not saying that this is definitively what happened.
So
right?
The FA goes to you, Ban, you're meant to do that on purpose.
We think that you're conning us and lying to us. People lie on the balance of probabilities. I think that's how the FA operates. And you can't, I think, make a distinction and say, well, Ibrahimovic was definitely on, because then using your argument, then unless you become a mind reader and you can read Ibrahimovic's mind, then
Ibra would say exactly the same.
Ibra would say the exact same thing.
See, only the players know in their heads on that specific moment whether you deliberately did it. You only know.
Right.
I mean, I've been involved in many elbows and blah, blah, blah. And some intentional and some are accidental, but they could both look just as bad.
Right. And some are reckless without being intentional. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
In your career, how many times have you jumped over someone and landed on someone's head? Exactly.
Not on someone's head, but I've landed on somebody and I haven't meant to do it.
How many times have you jumped over someone and landed on his head?
It's a miscalculation. If you're looking at somewhere else, you've got no idea.
Answer the question. How many times have you landed on someone's head?
Not the head, but on their body.
There's another point too. And
my feet keep taking me to the fridge.
There's one angle where you can see
so
it.
So does this.
Which there is no actual reason for him to be going in that direction other than perhaps to, I don't know, maybe by jumping over him, he makes sure Ibrahimovic doesn't immediately get up or whatever. I'm not saying he wanted to jump on his head. But I think that will weigh into it as well. A broader point on Ibrahimovic, I counted 13 red cards in his career. I mean, this won't be a red card, but he's going to miss the FA Cup. Do you care about the FA Cup?
Yeah.
All right. He's going to miss the FA Cup tie away to Chelsea. Pretty big loss, yeah?
No.
I think it'll do United
a world of good, and
not the world
Chelsea
of good, but it will do them good. To all of a sudden, just bring him out and put a different kind of centre forward down the middle.
Right.
And
I think it will. Three games, okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's a massive loss of what you're now going to try and paint the picture.
So you don't think that this will cost United a top four finish?
You know, I think it's already gone for them. The run-in's hard. It's just not going to happen.
Wow, you really are Mr. Negative.
No, I'm not. I'm telling you as it is.
All right. Sorry, do you think United have zero chance of making the top four?
No, given that they're they have a chance,
3 points away with a game in hand?
Sounds like the O.J. Simpson trial, this, on Zlatan and Mings.
Top four.
He was going this direction. What was the name of the guy? The guy who defended O.J.?
Johnny Cochran.
Johnny old Cochran. That's you. You're Johnny today.
I'm doing my best.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.
Moving on to our debate this week, which actually slightly links to this. There's an interview, I think it was Gary Jacob, speaking to Robert Snodgrass, that well-known cheat. No, just kidding. But he is somebody who's been accused of cheating in the past, diving to avoid contact and so on. The FA want to introduce something that apparently exists in Scotland. I was largely unaware. And which is something that was once pushed by UEFA years ago. There was a famous incident involving Arsenal and Celtic and Eduardo in the Champions League, which is retrospective punishment for diving. In other words, you've conned the referee by diving. And so then we go and we look at the video and we ban you. Now, I'm guessing from the Scowcroft camp, if the guy just says, no, I didn't dive, using the Mings principle, nobody would ever get banned.
That's what happens. So how far are you going to go with it? So if I'm playing football and the ball goes out for throwing and I know it's come off me, but I get the referee, that's our ball. Is that conning the referee?
Well, I think they would only apply it to penalties in simulation. But yeah, that is conning.
So how far are you going to go with it?
Well, I'm not going anywhere. It's the FA, right? It's your peeps, the people who gave you your coaching license, right? They're the ones who are suggesting this. Personally, I think it's really unworkable. And in situations where they've had this, they've managed to do it for like when people scored goals with their hand and then claimed it and stuff like that, because that's pretty cut and dried. With diving to win penalties, it's extremely difficult, or what they found in the past. I think it keeps going to people appeal it and so on. And it's difficult. It's really, really difficult.
What's the difficulty? If there's contact or no contact, surely that's a big part of it.
It's still vague.
Sometimes there can be no contact and it's still
true. But then you start with contact or no contact, and after that, if there's no contact,
you're gonna get a lot of Arsenal, old time Arsenal fans.
I'm not saying no, because I agree with you. I think you can be unbalanced by someone who doesn't touch you, especially if you run at pace to him.
Right.
And what's wrong of diving out the way? You can see someone coming. You think, well, I'm going to have to dive over this. He's not going to catch me. What's wrong with that?
So I think if you start with contact or no contact, and then if there's no contact, and it was
contact's allowed in the game.
Then
it's getting less and less. I think this is where the problem is.
Yeah, but it is getting less. But in the rule book, you can have contact. So we're giving penalties for people making very minimal contact. And the problem is I think penalty is the biggest challenge for football, because it's become so laughable, decisions that are given and not given, that we can't get it right. And I don't even think with video evidence we're going to get it right.
But this is diving.
Because this is
not
the argument.
But this is specifically
diving. Diving, but it's a similar. Most diving around, you know, diving is another issue that's associated to a similar, you know, situations that happen with penalties. I just look at diving and think, really, are we going to be able to get this spot on?
Well, I want to ask you something in that vein about something we were talking about before. So in the Burnley game, ridiculous penalty decision. The ball comes off Sam Vokes, who plays for Burnley, attacking player. Somehow the officials all get confused and award the penalty to Burnley, thinking that it was a Swansea defender who handled it. Now, Sam Vokes knows that he handled the ball because presumably he could feel the ball hitting his arm, right? Should he have had a moral imperative to go to the referee and say, I mean, is he effectively cheating?
Well, yeah, but football's riddled with cheating. Isn't that part of it?
All right, thank you, Mr. Cynical. Would you have done that?
No one would have.
No one would have.
What?
Why?
Why? Because it's the right thing to do, because you can be celebrated as a hero for a day and a role model to young kids.
For a day, for maybe an hour, and then...
Well, you know what? Robbie Fowler, okay, who played for Liverpool, who won it five times, which is substantially more than United. Didn't he once...
Arsenal.
Yeah, he said that he was in the penalty.
Yeah.
Arsenal, that was.
Yeah, and the referee proved to him, said, no, you didn't. You're right, he didn't touch it, but he came out and he didn't get any contact with the ball, so that's why it's a penalty. Okay.
But right? Whatever the but case was, he was honest, right? Sam Vokes and James Scowcroft are like not to be on it? I mean, is that what you're saying? Like,
no, but I just think it's... You know, it's sport. Sport is competitive, and the very successful, get a castle back me on it. You have to play on the edge. If you want to be successful, you've got to play right on the very edge. You can't play within yourself. You can't think, oh, God, better not do that. I better not.
But you're not playing on the edge here. It's not like he went... It's not like he went and he plans it like, oh, I'll handle the ball and then this referee's an idiot and you'll think it was the opposing defender, right?
Maybe he could do
it. Entirely accidental, right?
Yeah. Football is full of win at all costs. It always has been. That's been the controversy that surrounds football. Gab, you might look like that, but if you were a golfer...
Mid-table Burnley.
No, you're a golfer, right?
They've won their Premier League this season.
Llorente pushes... Fernandes.
Yeah, but he does it intentionally to get an advantage.
Yeah.
Volks did not handle the ball intentionally.
So should he go to the referee and say, exactly. Sorry, so I pushed him there.
Because
like a mother's meeting every week.
No. What I'm saying is, in Volks' case, it was a mistake that had nothing to do with him in the sense that he didn't go and create the situation, right? Yeah. He could have helped the referee make a mistake. He wasn't trying to gain an edge, and we can discuss that that's cheating and that that's a different situation, right? But... Put it this way. Volks is like the guy who you leave your wallet in the park and he says, oh, look, finders keepers, and he puts it in the pocket.
That's harsh.
This is exactly what he is. Llorente is the guy who goes and steals your wallet. Which is a bit different. I know it's obviously a far-fetched analogy.
No. Yeah.
But this goes back to what you were saying, Cass. The culture in football is that we frown upon the guy stealing your wallet, unless he's really clever and gets away with it. But the guy finding the wallet and keeping it for himself rather than returning it to the rightful owner, right? That's totally fine. He did absolutely nothing to earn that wallet.
In other sports, you would not cheat or you would not be dishonest. You'd be frowned upon. If you're a golfer and you did something, an individual sport, you'd be out of the sport quicker than you knew it. But football accepts the part of dishonesty. It does. That's how it's run. And it happens at all levels in football, just on the pitch.
It's a dark world you inherit.
Alexis Sanchez against Hull. He knows the ball has bounced off his arm into the goal.
Yeah.
Do you remember that goal?
On Sanchez.
Yeah. No. But do you remember that goal? But he goes and celebrates and just waits for the referee
I had one. I scored against Cag
as well.
For Nancy, a ball come to me. It was down my left side and I controlled it in my hand. I hit my left foot and went in the bottom corner. They're all appealing the can back four. And I'm like, look, no, I didn't. So I'm part of what football is. That is, and maybe that's one of the reasons why we love it so much in many ways. There is so much controversy.
The referee's made a mistake. Move on.
Keep the wallet. Very quick. I just put it this way. I think if I were Sam Vokes, I would have said, I would have done it. I would have basked in the limelight. I think you would have done something good for yourself. You would have done something good for people watching.
But you're talking, this is a split second decision, Gab. You're talking like he's got all this time to reflect on, I'll be seen as a hero and no one
acquits. What happened if his manager?
This is a split second.
And his manager, Sean Dyche, you wouldn't do that because Sean Dyche is a fundamentally good person. Right?
If you say so.
Are you making a face? Did you ever play against Sean Dyche?
No, I haven't, but I know some managers, if you'd have done that, would have said, what on earth are you,
But not every manager is Neil Warnock. Right, before we get the quick hits, there's just a very quick point. Jamie Redknapp does these interviews, and a lot of them, I think, are quite insightful because I think he asks the right questions. And, obviously, he has a certain camaraderie with the people he answers. But he spoke to Ross Barkley. This is in the Mail. And he makes the point that, he doesn't like it when it gives him the hump when people question Barkley or doubt him. Which again struck me as like, what is he, like the Messiah, some cult leader? But he says, if I was your manager, I would build my team around you, which is kind of what Ronald Koeman's done, given the position he plays. And it's definitely what Roberto did, given that Barkley, I think, played every game last season for Everton. And he says, why do people look at what you can't do rather than what you can do? Fair enough. You want to be positive. Great. But here's the answer from Barkley, which got me. He says, look at John Stones, Harry Kane, Raheem Sterling, Dele Alli. Put them in the Barcelona side and they would look unbelievable. Now, I don't pick on the guy, and maybe it's a throwaway comment. Maybe it's more of an issue for whatever PR handler Barkley says. But I think this really makes him look incredibly unself-aware. Does anybody here think that these guys would look, quote, unbelievable in the Barcelona side? Is his implication saying that, like, if these people...
So what he's saying is get Neymar, Suarez, Messi, get them out and get these lads in and Barcelona will...
No, I by the way I read it, if you played alongside...
Those players would look, yeah.
If you played alongside them, they would look unbelievable. Yeah. Which they wouldn't, because maybe Dele Alli one day will be as good as Rakitic, but maybe he's there now.
You've got to earn the right to get to that stage. I'm not quite sure they've earned the right yet. Mm.
But also, it's not like these people play for bad teams. I mean, Stones and Sterling play for a very talented team.
You're talking about Harry Kane, and I'm a massive fan of Harry Kane, but if you look what he did in the Euros, Harry performed. On the big, big stage.
You think you might take Luis Suarez over him?
No, but what I'm saying, sometimes you get very comfortable in your club and everything, especially if you come through the youth ranks, it's all new. And then you go and get that big 90, 100 million pound move and you're out of your comfort zone and you've got to perform now. You're not the, he's one of our own and all of this lot. You've got to perform from day one. And I think the Ronaldos of the world can handle that. Hopefully Harry Kane, these lads can, but...
Yeah, I think you know, and I don't make too much of a big deal out of this, but especially in this country where there's such a history of young players sort of flaming out because they get built up and they get torn down. I don't think this is a very clever thing to say. It's great to have confidence, but you know, the fact of the matter is these are all guys who are on an upward trajectory. Maybe they'll get there, maybe they won't. Just leave them be. Just say they're talented, leave them be. Don't start making comparisons with the Barcelona players because the fact is, none of these people would get into the Barcelona side.
It clearly feels, though, that the criticism of those young players is really, really harsh here in England. And maybe he's got a point.
I'm sorry.
Maybe he's talking a little bit. I think Raheem Sterling, John Stones, and even Ross Barkley had a lot of stick.
Raheem Sterling last season. Last season, Raheem Sterling cost £50 million and was not good.
Every single footballer, whether you're at the very bottom or the very top, gets stick.
Yeah.
Handle it. It makes you a better player. It makes you a better human being. If you're going to get to the very top, you've got to be able to handle stick. All of a sudden, if a bit of stick comes your way, that's not very nice.
No, I agree. But
you're never going to go.
Maybe the expectations of younger players, despite all the talent they have, is a bit too much. And when they don't deliver like people would want them to, then they get that extra criticism that they feel maybe is unfair. I don't know. Yeah.
Ross is probably speaking indirectly about himself as well in that group, where he feels a little bit unfair. Look, they're all talented boys, but they're not that level.
No, not yet. Maybe one day.
Soon, yeah, I'm sure.
The other thing is, if you were to go back in time, I haven't checked the timeline, but if instead of Stone, Sterling, Alli, I were to say Rio Ferdinand, Paul Scholes, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, you know where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
Right? Those guys actually arguably achieved more when they were the same age than these guys have. So, you know, let's take it easy and let's just let these people develop. Right. Enough of this. How about some quick hits instead? Nathan Redmond. Now, there's a talented English player. Shines as Southampton win 4-3 away to Watford. Scoey, this guy, I think, has been somewhat underappreciated since he made his precocious debut for Birmingham. Was it way back in the day? Why don't we make a bigger deal about him?
I think you need to give him time. I think I've actually seen him play for Birmingham, I've seen him play for Norwich, and I saw him play in the under-21s in Toulon. And he's slowly getting better. I think he's established himself now as a Premier League player. Can he then go to the next level? Jury's out.
Back-to-back wins for Crystal Palace, and Big Sam praises Mamadou Sakho. But Julian, I think back to his positive drug test and ban, which was later rescinded. By the way, there's a tremendous article on Vice Sports. You find out that it was basically ludicrous that he was banned in the first place. But I kind of wonder, was that kind of a sliding doors moment? If he had no ban, he might have gone to the Euros and France would have won the Euros. And then if Klopp really didn't like him, he could have sold him in the summer and he wouldn't have been spending like basically 6 months on his behind. Is he just really unlucky?
Oh, no, I think that was very harsh on him and really hard. And I felt for him because he didn't deserve it at all, like you said, Gab. I don't think it would have been as simple as just him being there and France winning the Euros.
But he would have been there.
He would have been there for sure. He would have made the squad. He would have also, you know, played in the Europa League final and with Liverpool. And I think that was
harsh.
And
Liverpool would have been in the Champions League this year.
Can you imagine?
Think of the knock-on effect.
My mads.
Fernando Llorente bags 2 goals as Swansea defeat Burnley. Cass, he now has 11 Premier League goals. Now, you know a thing or two about heading and ball. What makes his heading so good?
Power. Direction. Spent my whole career fighting off defenders and all your television mates who get every angle looking at me failing or seeing defenders, never spotted defenders failing me. And even though he got, I'd say arguably his second goal was a foul, I love the power and direction of the header. That is an art that very few people can do. And we must remember, Fernando's done it for many, many other clubs as well. Not to the level of we're seeing, well, probably at Bilbao, but he's suddenly, for me, showing what a good use of a centre-forward is.
Jamie Vardy scores on Monday. Riyad Mahrez scores at the weekend in Leicester's 3-1 win over Hull City. Scully, there's really no valid reason for the Srivaddhanaprabhas not to give the job to old Shaky at this point, right?
Obviously not. The two. It's all about results. He's got two massive results from them. Turned it round so far. He's obviously wanted the job for a while as well, so you might as well give it to him.
It's amazing when you bring in new blood from outside, I admit. Just
yeah.
Harry Kane does it again with 2 goals in Tottenham's 3-2 win over Everton. Skass, I asked Goey this last week, but I would like to get another view because, to me, this is a big project of learning that I want to understand. What makes Harry Kane so devastatingly good? Since the start of the 2014-15 season.
60-odd goals.
2 goals every 3 games in all comps, which is pretty unbelievable.
Mm. You've got 20 seconds. 20 seconds.
He's, I love his desire and attitude to continually be moving. He gets lots of one-on-ones. And he seems to find space. Without being the quickest, he finds that shoulder on the defender where he just can sneak behind them and get away and be strong enough and quick enough to finish off. And he's a very good finisher. Whatever we say about Harry, you know, all the work rate and everything he does, his finishing in front of goal has been exceptional.
Julian and I was sceptical about the signing of Leroy Sané. I will admit this. Not that he wasn't a gifted player or one with a bright future. I just felt that City could have spent their money to strengthen in other positions. But now, after a slow start, he's absolutely on fire, as he showed in their 2-0 win at Sunderland. Some people are even comparing him to Gareth Bale, which I thought might be a bit OTT, but your assessment?
Yeah, I was very excited when he signed, and I always thought he would need a bit of time to adapt. And I know it's a bit of cliche saying all those foreigners, they need a bit of time, but I think it's true, especially at such a young age, and especially with Pep Guardiola as a manager who... It gives you so much that not only you have to adapt to your new league and a new culture and a new country, but also to a manager that is completely different than anything you've seen before. And I think he needed it that time. And now we're seeing the real Sané that got everything all in place in that jigsaw. And I think there's much, much more to see from him.
By the way, speaking of jigsaw, if he continues to play Yaya Toure and Fernandinho, and presumably he'll play Aguero at centre forward at this stage, there's 3 spots left, and there's Sané, Sterling, David Silva,
De Bruyne,
who was on the bench this weekend,
yeah.
And I guess Nolito and Jesus Navas, but we don't have them.
Yeah.
But who misses out?
Play? Yeah, I don't know. But how do you go to Monaco, for example? If you play just one of Fernandinho,
I'm assuming he'll play De Bruyne to keep the ball but, you know. Well, surely it won't be Sterling, because you could put Sterling in Barcelona, he'd look unbelievable.
Anyway, do Gab's one. Where's Gab's?
Gab, one for you. Interesting column, as always, about Milan today. But I just want to know what it means for Donnarumma.
Gigi Donnarumma, of course, their hyper-talented goalkeeper, supposedly chased by half the big clubs in Europe. Well, the interesting thing is, obviously, Milan's owner agreed to sell the club to this Chinese consortium back in August. They made a 100 million euro down payment, and they're going to pay the rest later by a certain date. They missed the deadline, so then they paid another 100 million to extend the deadline, and they missed the deadline again. It's not clear whether they're going to pay another 100 million or what's going to happen. But the point is, Milan right now There's a state of uncertainty. Donnarumma's contract expires in June 2018, so not long to go. His agent is Mino Raiola, who scares people. And yeah, I think it's a valid question. Raiola's going to say, well, wait a minute. Why should he extend his deal here if we don't even know who owns the club and who's going to run the club? You sort that out, and then we'll talk about a new contract. He's been linked, obviously, to Chelsea, should Courtois go. He's been linked to United, should De Gea go. Presumably De Gea and Courtois would both
one
be going
them
to. One of them would go to Real Madrid, yeah. is the stock thinking. Linked to Real Madrid as well, should, you know, if they don't like Keylor Navas anymore. It's an interesting situation. And knowing Raiola a little bit, I almost wonder, there might even be more openings for goalkeepers in 18 months' time when you could deliver him on a silver platter on a free and then negotiate the largest commission on in the ever. History.
Even bigger than Pogba.
So, yeah, he's at a very good spot.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.